weather and climate often cause concern and curiosity, but understanding the facts behind the phenomena can be a challenge. We're here to help. From the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, and Illinois Public Media, welcome to Weather Realness, a weekly podcast about the skies above Illinois and the world. I'm your host, Maddie Stover, a doctoral student in physics here at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. While Illinois is one of the least active states for wildfires annually, we do still have two wildfire seasons each year. My dissertation is actually on wildfire and prescribed fire, a kind of controlled fire for land management that we'll talk more about later. Fire is impacted by meteorological factors like humidity, but it's also dictated by the physics of the layer of the atmosphere closest to the Earth's surface called the boundary layer, which is how my physics ties in here. Many people associate wildfires in America with the Mountain West or California, but just weeks ago, major wildfires broke out in Georgia.
Wildfires are still burning in South Georgia and northern Florida. One in Georgia has destroyed nearly 90 homes and forced people to evacuate. The region has been in a worsening drought for months, which has made it easier for wildfires to spread and harder for firefighters to contain. Emily Jones from member station WABE has been covering the fire. She's with us now. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning.
You were reporting yesterday on the ground in Brantley County, where some people have lost their homes. What did you see and hear there?
People are pretty shaken. They're not used to dealing with wildfires here. They've seen hurricanes, but not really fires like this.
Also, the most devastating wildfire in American history happened here in the Midwest. According to the National Weather Service, it happened on October of 1871 as a forest fire swept through northeast Wisconsin. More than 1,200 people died. The town of Peshtigo and dozens of other communities were burned to the ground.
They said it sounded like 20 locomotives. The noise was immense. It was like a numbing, unbelievable. I think that was it. They couldn't believe that ordinary, what they were used to, a forest fire, was that big, and there was nowhere to go.
Within a matter of 15 to 20 minutes, the whole city was burning at one time. I can't imagine what was going through those people's minds. They knew they had to run for their life.
Survivors would tell of fireballs blasting through town, smashing into people and buildings, instantly igniting them.
That fire happened on the same day as two significant wildfires here in Illinois, the Great Chicago Fire and the Great Urbana Fire. Joining us to talk more about wildfires in Illinois, as well as how wildfires are changing under climate change, is Jeff Frame, professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and Trent Ford, Illinois State Climatologist with the Prairie Research Institute. Thank you for joining us, Jeff and Trent.
Thank you, Maddie. It's great to be back.
Yeah, thanks, Maddie.
So, Jeff, you teach an advanced forecasting course that covers wildfires. How do wildfires start?
Yeah, wildfires, one natural mechanism of wildfire ignition is lightning. That's predominantly out in the western half of the United States, where we have thunderstorms that develop in fairly dry environments, but there's enough storm fuel or instability to get them going. But there's limited rainfall, and the rain that does fall falls through a deep layer of dry air near the ground, so a lot of the rain evaporates. However, the charge separation is still there in the thunderstorm. You get lightning, you get strong winds, and that's our main natural wildfire ignition source. However, we estimate that between 60 and 90% of all wildfires in the United States are human-caused. Sources of these include burning debris, for example, farmers burning debris on their fields on days when they really shouldn't with high fire danger, campfires or cook fires that get out of control out near campgrounds, controlled burns. Several years ago, there was a controlled burn near Los Alamos, New Mexico, that turned into a major wildfire, burned over 100,000 acres out there. Improperly discarded cigarettes, sparks from equipment, cars and trucks, for example, driving or dragging chains or things like that along the road can promote sparks. Children, don't play with matches. That can start wildfires. Fireworks, not so much this time of year, but especially closer to the 4th of July. And sadly, 21%, we think, of all fires are started by arson. That includes the Palisades fire that was so devastating.
What we're seeing is
honestly pure pandemonium and chaos.
A huge plume of smoke is blowing all across Altadena and Pasadena, right?
We just have one house after another that is completely on fire.
Only way to describe the destruction of what we're seeing out here, it looks like a war zone.
It is hard to sum up everything that has changed since those first moments of the Palisades and Eaton fires. The early images, especially chilling, now knowing what they would become.
I just heard on the news this morning that the arsonist is being charged. He's pleading innocent, of course, but supposedly, praised some murderers and things like that. So not of good mental state.
So, Jeff, when is wildfire season here in Illinois?
Yeah, in Illinois, we see two main wildfire seasons each year. One is in the spring, roughly from March 1st to May 15th, so we're just kind of coming out of that now. And then the other one is in the fall, as crops and things begin to dry up, especially after harvest, and as leaves come down off the trees. Now, both of these seasons tend to feature dry, dead vegetation, for example, before spring greenup. A lot of the grass and weeds and other things, leftover crops from last year, are very dry out there. Same thing in the fall, right? You notice the corn turns from green to brown. Again, leftover debris in the fields from harvest. And then as the leaves come down off the trees, things tend to dry out. Now, you might think, why not the winter time? Well, in the winter, we don't see very high temperatures, meaning we don't see very low relative humidity in the winter. And usually pretty consistent rains and, of course, snowfall keeps a damper on that. And then in the summer, when it's really hot, the issue is all of our vegetation is green. And here in Illinois, we do tend to see fairly frequent rainfalls through the summer that does put a damper on wildfire season.
And for folks listening, can you just remind us what relative humidity is and why that's important for wildfire spread?
Yeah, relative humidity is basically the ratio of the moisture in the air to the amount of moisture or water vapor in the air you need to saturate it. So when relative humidity is very high, that limits evaporation. That means plants, we're not going to be evaporating a lot of water out of the plants, and they're going to stay relatively moist. However, when the relative humidity gets very low, or for you weather folks out there, the temperature and the dew point are very far apart, that increases the amount of evaporation, from soils, from puddles, from everything, including plants. So the vegetation dries out a lot more rapidly. And tender grasses can dry out in as little as 1 to a few hours. Whereas if you look at something like a sapling that might be 3 to 8 inches across, something like that, that would take 1,000 hours or so to dry out. And so that would take more of a prolonged drought in order to dry.
And Trent, are there any precautions that we should take during wildfire season here in central Illinois?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, trying to avoid burning during times when we see these meteorological conditions that are conducive to fire. So really strong winds, hot or low humidity, high temperatures. The wind is particularly important. When we see really strong winds, we should avoid burning at all times, especially during the spring and the fall. If we are in periods of drought, a lot of times counties will issue burn bans that coincide with the warm season as well. And that's just referencing the fact that we may have dry vegetation. So just following those orders as well. And then like Jeff mentioned, just other than burning, just being careful with things like fireworks and other types of either, recreation or other kinds of things that can ignite and create that source for fires.
And in these situations, if it's a less dangerous fire weather setup, the National Weather Service will issue what's called a fire weather watch, and that would cover several counties. And then for the most serious conditions, they will issue what's called a red flag warning. That's not very obvious to a lot of folks what that is. Some of you may have never heard that before, but that means there are very serious wildfire conditions forecast. But just like a tornado watch means that a tornado hasn't necessarily been sighted and probably hasn't been, a fire weather watch or a red flag warning, again, conditions are favorable for wildfire spread, but you still need that ignition source. And like I said, for the majority of wildfires, including here in Illinois, that ignition source is us. Down power lines are another ignition source there. Mm-hmm. Now, in very serious conditions, when you have a wildfire threatening a town, The Weather Service will issue a fire weather warning. I'm not aware of any such warning like that ever issued here in Illinois, but they have been issued, for example, for grass fires out on the Great Plains and also in parts of the West when you have a rapidly spreading wildfire threatening a community.
You're listening to Weather Realness, the weekly podcast about climate and weather. We're talking about wildfires with Jeff Frame, professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Science at the University of Illinois, and Trent Ford, Illinois State Climatologist with the Prairie Research Institute. Jeff, how about wildfire season in other parts of the country? When does that tend to happen?
Yeah, in most of the eastern half of the United States, wildfire season kind of coincides with that here in Illinois, where there's one in the spring before spring green up. Now, in a lot of more forested areas, of course, it's not corn and crop debris left in the fields, but it's leaves left over from last year, right? Nobody goes and rakes the forests, right? And so those leaves can dry out very quickly, especially as temperatures warm up and relative humidity drops into the spring, and that can cause wildfires. The other wildfire season, again, is in the fall, especially after the leaves come down. Again, if you remember about 10 years ago, there was a devastating wildfire in the Great Smoky Mountains of Tennessee, devastated parts of the resort community of Gatlinburg.
Wow.
The firestorm exploded in seconds.
Hit the gas, hit the gas.
Residents and vacationers thought they were safe until they looked out their windows.
Panic. That's all we had was panic. We could feel the heat coming off. It was nothing but red.
Oh my God, it's so hot.
The escape was complicated by narrow mountain roads clogged with traffic, flames everywhere.
Worst day of my life.
I know some of you have likely been there on vacation, a great place to be. But again, a lot of cabins and other things did burn in that. The exception is Florida, where they don't see the fall wildfire season. That's their rainy season. But late winter into the spring, winter is the dry season in Florida. So again, kind of, you know, the past several months coming here into May, we're coming to the close of that. And again, that's also consistent with those wildfires that have been spreading in Georgia due, again, not only to the time of year, but the pre-existing drought conditions in effect. Out in the Intermountain West, the wildfire season tends to be more in the summertime. Temperatures get quite warm out there. We get a lot of dry thunderstorms forming over the mountains. So that's our peak wildfire season in the Intermountain West. In the Great Plains, tends to be winter into early spring. Temperatures there and can get quite warm in the winter. It's not unusual in parts of Texas to see 70 or 80 degree temperatures in January. But that comes with very little moisture, so relative humidity is low, and the winds out there can be quite high. So winter, early spring, wildfire season out there. And then, of course, most famously is California, where wildfire season is fall into the winter, and that's really influenced by their climate. As I've mentioned before on the show, California sees almost all their rainfall between October and April. So that means any given year, it's very dry there for the summer. But all the rainfall they do get in the wintertime allows for vegetation to grow. And then that vegetation, even the trees, dry out during the summer. And by dry out, I don't mean they turn brown and die, but they just get very dry inside. And especially if the wet season has a later onset. So instead of, you know, the first rains in October or November, if those rains hold off until January, that can set the stage for a lot of wildfires in California, which, again, is influenced by the large-scale weather pattern. Notably, out west, there's a phenomenon known as the Santa Ana winds, in which a cold area of high pressure in the fall builds in over the high desert areas of the west. That air is cold. It's also relatively dry. But then as the air comes out of that high and downslopes a mile to the California coast, well, it's going to dry even more, and it can warm by as much as 32 degrees Fahrenheit per mile it descends, resulting in very warm, very dry conditions at the coast. And then those winds can be funneled through gaps and canyons, locally increasing the wind speeds and leading to localized fire spread there. And that's the mechanism we saw contribute to the Palisades fire out in California in January of 2025. But on the flip side, last fall, they had an early onset to the rainy season. So wildfire season last fall, it was MIA in California, fortunately. But with the dry winter and spring they've seen out west, the snow drought they've had this winter, we're very worried about the upcoming wildfire season in the summer inland and possibly toward the coast as we get into the fall. We will see.
And one more local fire. So, Trent, this isn't one of the worst fires we've seen in Illinois, but in October of 2024, Champaign County experienced a fast-moving fire in the farm fields east of Urbana that shut down I-74. Here's some of the coverage.
At times, the flames have been very big. They're quickly moving through these dried crops. In some cases, the crops have been harvested, but in others, got these very tall, crispy, dried corn crops. And so at times, as the fire has moved through these corn crops that have not been harvested, the flames have been very tall, in some cases maybe 10, 15 feet tall, moving very quickly from south to north. So at times, very intense fire conditions out here.
What kinds of conditions can lead to a fire like this?
It's the same sort of situation as we saw in 1871. We had drought. It wasn't nearly as severe as it was back in the Great Urbana Fire, but we had drought nonetheless. And so we had dry fuel. And today's landscape in central Illinois does look different than it did in 1871. For example, we have much more extensive crops. So even in a wet year, we're going to have that normal crop dry down. So pretty much every October, no matter how wet it is, we're going to have some pretty dry fuel in fields. When we combine that with the wind and the low humidity that we had those days in October of 2024, it made for really high fire risk. And in fact, all the warnings in the watches that Jeff had mentioned the National Weather Service put out, they had been putting out for that time period. So we caught ignition in a field near St. Joe, just east of Champaign-Urbana. And it actually took a sort of volunteer group of farmers to till a fire stop, basically lying in the soil to stop that fire from spreading to other fields and possibly jumping over I-74. So that would have been quite devastating. And again, it shows just that, you know, although like we've mentioned, we associate the wildfire out west, and certainly as far as an overall risk of fire is concerned, that definitely have a higher risk out there. But, you know, especially during the fall when we have these kind of coalescence of all these ingredients for fires, it can make for a particularly dangerous situation sometimes in the Midwest.
And what is that fire stop you alluded to?
Yeah, so this is something that I actually do in wildland firefighting as well, where they'll have people with bulldozers and in some cases shovels out there digging, basically called a fire stop. It's basically like a berm, you can imagine, in the soil that provides, in some cases it only needs to be 6-7 feet high, that can provide a barrier that slows the fire from progressing. So oftentimes what will happen with wildfires is we'll see ignition in the sub-canopy near the ground. And when we have a lot of vegetation, that can actually spread to the canopy. And when it becomes a canopy fire, then all bets are off. But what those breaks can do is it can stop that sub-canopy fire from spreading, even just temporarily, to kind of get a handle on that fire. And so we saw that. Obviously, we don't have a big tree canopy in the Midwest here, at least not in central Illinois. So what we saw is that basically tilling that kind of berm there in the soil stopped or slowed that fire from spreading from the dry crops.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Weather Realness, the weekly podcast about climate and weather. We're talking about wildfires with Jeff Frame, professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois, and Trent Ford, Illinois State Climatologist with the Prairie Research Institute. So, Trent, Illinois is getting wetter with climate change. Are wildfires expected to become less of a problem here in Illinois in the future in a wetter climate?
Yeah. So this is the fun part about climate change, is that it's not exactly always consistent one-directional kind of trend to say, yeah, we're getting wetter. However, we are getting wetter. So that does mean that in general, unlike some places like the desert Southwest, it's not this kind of linear trend of just bigger, badder wildfire seasons. However, what we do see is, because of increasing temperatures, particularly in the fall, without necessarily increased humidity, that can increase those vapor pressure deficits and drop your humidity values. So we can see this potential trend towards more ephemeral, short-lived periods of higher risk of wildfires during the fall, but not necessarily a year-over-year kind of trend. So it's a really complex sort of thing. So not necessarily more wildfires overall, or certainly like every year is going to be worse than the previous year. However, when we do get the right conditions, those warmer falls can make for a more problematic wildfire. I will say that in the 2023 update of the state's hazard mitigation plan, a wildfire was put in there, I believe, for the first time. And I know Illinois Emergency Management Association, OHS, is pushing emergency managers to consider wildfire as an important hazard that maybe folks hadn't, in Illinois at least, hadn't considered before. So even though we may not see this necessarily this long-term trend, it is something that we still are likely going to have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. And how about, the wildfire risk going forward under climate change in other parts of the country?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the Southeast is similar to the Midwest. We're getting wetter, but those vapor pressure deficits and the humidity in the fall could lead to some worse wildfire seasons, but not necessarily year over year. It's really the plains, the Great Plains, especially the Western Plains and the Southwest, that recent historical trends over the last 30 years of longer wildfire seasons, where it's not just relegated to the very late part of summer, early fall, more extensive fires, more frequent fires, and that really taxes resources, because if you only have so many crews for fighting wildfires, you have to prioritize where those places are. And at the same time, we see, not related to climate change, but this spread of urbanization and development in the desert Southwest that can bump up this what we call urban fire interface, which is really interesting but scary. And we've seen that in recent years with the Palisades fire I mentioned near LA, and there was fires just, I believe, last year near Boulder, Colorado, and NCAR had to be evacuated at one point. And so that development kind of works against us when we're trying to fight this kind of long-term trend in those places like the Southwest of more increased fires.
So, Trent, a kind of a piece of this wildfire puzzle that Jeff alluded to is fire suppression. Mm-hmm. So before European colonization of the area that's now known as the United States, indigenous peoples living in the area would start controlled fires intentionally for a variety of agricultural and cultural purposes. This we now call prescribed fire. Can you kind of tell us a little bit more about what the role of this in central Illinois is?
Yeah, so prescribed fire, good fire, is sort of a term that's come about. And this is the idea that fire is not only a natural process for ecosystem regeneration, but also something that is very beneficial and useful for humans, and has been, as you mentioned, for thousands of years and thousands of generations across North America. The reason that this is important is because when we look at the ecosystems across central Illinois, much of central and northern Illinois, we're talking about tall grass prairie. And so that tall grass prairie thrives in an environment with fairly frequent burning or fairly frequent fire, because that tall grass prairie can regenerate after fire much more quickly than other types of invasive or non-native shrubs. At the same time, for our mixed savanna and forested ecosystems, the oaks and hickories that support a much larger biodiversity can regenerate much faster than the maples and beeches that would succeed them if that burning didn't occur. So for overall ecosystem health, repeat fire is extremely important. And this was something that was recognized thousands of years ago by indigenous peoples, like you mentioned, pre-colonial, pre-European settlement. And actually, the Illinois State Archaeological Survey has been doing a lot of work across central Illinois for the past decade or so, looking at pre-colonial charcoal sediment in central Illinois, in places like Champaign and parts of Livingston and Champaign and Ford counties, dating those and trying to understand not only what Native people's relationship with fire was in what is now central Illinois, but also when that began. Because we see a large change in central Illinois' climate to something that's warmer and drier, much more like what we have today, about 6,000 or 7,000 years ago. And that really marks when we start to see these charcoal deposits as well. So something that's likely being used to not only ensure a healthy regenerative prairie land, prairie ecosystem, which really is the sort of the backbone of a lot of the hunting, the fishing, the gathering that was so crucial for a lot of the indigenous peoples that that inhabited this part of the country. So, it's really interesting. And to your point, especially in the 19th century and then for much of the 20th century, we lost a lot of that respect and understanding of prescribed fire, the good fire. And part of that is through fire suppression. Smokey the Bear, depending on, I have some friends who are fire ecologists and biogeographers, and depending on how much alcohol they've had, they'll tell you good or bad things about Smokey the Bear, right? Like only you can fight wildfires. And yeah, I mean, you know, the Palisades fire is not so good, but in many ways, fire is this natural and very important regenerative process. So putting out the small helpful fires can lead, and we've seen this years and years and years of evidence now, that putting out the small beneficial fires can lead to big problematic fires. So we're starting to see in land management, ecosystem management, that the growth of the respective prescribed burning. And definitely, I mean, it's not rare if you go out to Lake of the Woods or Homer Lake in Champaign County at certain times of the year, you'll see fires burning at night. And I think this is, we're hopefully on a long road, but on the road nonetheless to understanding that prescribed burning is an important part and fire is an important part of our health as humans.
That's about all we've got time for today, but thanks so much, Jeff and Trent, for chatting with us.
Thank you, Maddie. It was great to answer some of these burning questions about wildfire.
Yeah, thanks, Maddie.
Have a weather or climate question you want us to tackle? Leave us a voicemail at 217-333-2141 or email weatherrealness@illinois.edu. Coming up next, we're talking about some strange weather we've been having in Illinois recently, dust storms.